WRKC is proud to present the fourth season of The Adventures of Harry Flynn. The Adventures of Harry Flynn is written, performed, and directed by King's students. We now present our 33rd episode, The Long Drag, Part 2, when we last left our intrepid band.
Deborah's little brother Johnny was murdered. I'll show you all. I'm gonna find out just what happened, and then you'll know who the best really is.
Who wants a juice cup?
Bring your gun. I smell trouble.
Would you like to buy a scented candle?
Damn it.
And now, the conclusion.
Good morning, Twinkle Toes.
I came to from the last in a long, significant line of candle-related knockouts with a head that felt about six sizes too big and a sudden urge to be sick all over the smooth concrete floors. Given that the overpowering aroma of lavender, vanilla, and cinnamon was no longer noticeable, I assumed we'd been taken from the candle shop at some point. I still couldn't piece together where, because, except for one overhanging light, they were keeping the whole of the establishment nice and dark. Marla was in a chair, tied up next to me, passed out in the stone cold. Figures were leering all around us. Large, imposing figures holding large, imposing weapons that would give us large, imposing medical bills. One of the bozos chimed in from out the dark shroud. Figured he was the boss.
Let me make this simple. We've been here for hours. We want to go home. You want to go home. So, just please tell us who you're working for and why. And maybe we can end all the shenanigans. I was reading about this new psychological something or other in the back of my auto mag. It said that people are more inclined to do nice things if you're nice to them. I was saving it as my ace in the hole.
Huh. That ain't half bad. Continue.
Thank you. Now, start yapping, you, unless you want a good old-fashioned auto part beatdown, like your friend Johnny. That is, if you wouldn't mind at all.
They'd been doing the same bit for hours. They'd offer me the chance to tell them who I was and all that, or they'd beat me till I passed out. I'd always opted for the latter, and I wasn't changing now. I bolstered up my courage, inhaled deeply, and fed them the same line I'd been giving them since the start. I'm a little teapot. At least, I think it was the same line. For all I know, I could have some pretty serious head trauma. The head thug stepped out of the cover of darkness into the light. He was a stringy fellow, covered from head to foot in bruises. Apparently, he liked to get his hands dirty. His face had the sharp contours of a bird, and he was leering wildly. In one hand, he held a length of rusted pipe. The other hand was pointed angrily at me.
All right. You won't play ball? We'll make you play ball.
He cranked back with the pipe.
Batter up!
He swung. Hard. The brunt of it hit the chair, but a good bit of the pipe hit my arm. I went down like a new drinker taking his first shot of whiskey. Marla went down with me, but seeing as she was still out cold, she didn't seem to mind it all that much. Little did they know, I had the good fortune to have kept a hold of a sizable chunk of glass from the last candle incident. Needless to say, the last hour or so, I had been secretly cutting my bonds, at least when I was awake. That last knockover was just enough to make the main bit of rope go. I got up slowly, mostly on account of the pain. The bozos were stunned silent. I put up my fists. All right,
friends, let's do this.
The head thug charged at me, pipe blazing. I grabbed it mid-swing and ripped it away from him. He was fairly surprised.
I'm fairly surprised. We beat you up pretty good. How are you still standing?
Buddy, you should try my line of work. I get beat up so many times in a given week, I'm used to functioning without a full deck.
Oh, yeah? Well, deck this!
He charged at me again. I tripped up one of his legs with the pipe, then proceeded to take out his right hand. What I wanted to happen was to miss his hand and then tell him that if he didn't cooperate, it'd be next. But I sort of jumped the gun. Besides, aim has never been my strong suit. Just play it off like it was meant to happen, Flynn. Anybody else? And just like that, all but three of the cronies fled as fast as they could. Talk about a support system. He attempted to throw a punch with his other hand. I countered with the pipe. Scissors beats paper.
Hold on, sir. Hold on. What are you trying to suggest here?
What? Who are you?
I am a member of this gang, sir. But that is neither here nor there. Are you trying to imply that you were the scissors and his hands were paper? Is this the correct assumption?
Yeah, that's...
All right. I see what you're going for there. Allow me to make a rebuttal. The pipe. Although metal, it's not sharp, yes?
No, I guess not.
And his hands are much denser than the average piece of paper, correct?
Well, the point was...
Point or no point, the fact remains. It's an unsuccessful and ill-formed comparison. Try again.
All right. Let's see here. It pains me to do this.
Better. But...
Okay. Well, how about... Nobody breaks through the pipeline that easy.
No. Simple. No.
Guess you couldn't pass the bar?
Acceptable.
Ah, my hands! I'll never drive again unless we get to a hospital. Please help me.
Not until you answer some of my questions. First off, why did you kill little Johnny Sullivan?
Eh, wouldn't you like to know?
I grabbed one of his hands and squeezed.
Ah! All right. We killed him because he wanted out. He was the mechanic for the Rum Runners.
Rum Runners? Is that the name of the outfit?
Yeah. But there is no out, see? There's only deeper in. So it's more of an infit than anything.
Rum's a legal commodity nowadays. You still running it?
Nah. Nowadays it's,
Nowadays it's what? Don't make me squeeze.
Nowadays it's drugs. We run drugs.
I already knew that, but still. It helps to get it directly from the source. I figured I could ring him out for a little more info before giving him to the boys in blue to hang out the dry in county. So, how exactly does one get the drugs from point A to point B?
Come on, guy. I answered your questions. Now, let me go.
I squeezed his hand again.
All right! We get them from upstate. We race up there at night, get the stuff, and bring it back down here as fast as possible.
And Johnny helped? How?
Johnny tweaked the cars. He souped up the motors real good. Too bad he was killed.
Oh. But you did it anyway, didn't you? You could have let him out. Mr. Bossman didn't deem it fit, huh?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about you. You know, the boss, the head honcho, the big cheese.
I ain't the boss of the operation.
Oh, really? Then who? Mr. I don't think your tagline is good enough over here?
Oh, heavens no. I have neither the experience nor the charisma for leadership. I'm just along for the ride, so to speak.
Well, then who? Who's behind all this?
Oh, I think you know who, Mr. Flynn. I think you've known the whole time.
Third man emerged from the shadows. An older man in grease-stained coveralls chewing on a toothpick. Deamy. Deamy Costas?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Should have figured it was you.
Yeah, probably. I knew I'd be able to throw you off the scent.
Yeah. All that talk about caring for Johnny. You're a sick man, you know that? Probably didn't care about Johnny at all.
No. I love Johnny like it was my own flesh and blood. And boy, could that kid work. You'll never see as devoted of a mechanic.
And you still killed him? You're one hell of a guy.
Thank you.
Why did Johnny even choose to do this all in the first place?
Oh, that's easy. He didn't.
What?
No, he didn't sign up for it or anything like that. I gave him the cars as side projects. I didn't tell him at first what he was doing. I just said to mod the cars to go as fast as they could. Eventually he found out and he wouldn't stand for it. Yeah, that was the only problem with Johnny. His conscience got in the way. Too bad. He was in. And once you're in, there's no getting back out.
That's what I said, but he wouldn't listen.
You told him that?
He indeed told him that.
Are you sure you told him that? Because it's an important point.
No, I think he got it.
Definitely got it.
While Larry, Moe, and Curly were talking out who said what to whom, Marla was finally coming back around. I tried motioning to her as if to say, "Get out! They're distracted over something trivial. Get out now while you still can." But before she could even clear the fog out of her mind, Deamy noticed what I was doing and grabbed her.
Oh, no, you don't. Come here.
I went, pipe in tow, to somehow ward Deamy off. But he pulled a long knife from one of the pockets of his coverall. Marla stopped squirming.
Your move, detective. You can leave now and she gets it, or stay and you both get it.
You're not leaving me much of a choice here, Deamy.
Never said I would.
He raised the knife above his head. I went over to knock him out with the pipe. I intercepted one of the cronies' heads in the way.
Ow! My cranial area!
Ooh, sorry.
Any last words, Missy?
Not from her, but how about me? Come on, Marla, let's get out of here.
Oh, not so fast.
Deamy somehow shook off the pipe hit like it was nothing. Marla went to make a break for it, but Deamy was on top of her like meringue on a pie.
Oh, nice try. I was a soldier at the front of the 100 Days Offensive during the Great War. You're gonna have to do something a lot more devastating.
Deamy cold-cocked her right then and there. Now, I myself have done a whole mess of questionable things in my life, but hitting a woman? That's just something I couldn't let stand. Well, He won't be chasing us, will he? Oh, that's right, you're unconscious. I hoisted Marla up over my shoulders and ran as fast as I could through the barely lit exit way. I walked outside to find nothing but a barren stretch of asphalt and a couple cars. Turns out we were being held in a darkened one-car garage in some forsaken part of God's country. I headed towards the first car I would reasonably get to, letting Marla down with a soft thud. Whoops. I went to hotwire one of the mobster's cars, in hopes of a speedier getaway. Come on, come on. Yes. While I was busy surveying the car's controls, the elegant crony crawled up behind me and hoisted Marla out of the seat next to me.
Sorry, no time for explanation. I just thought that, well, seeing as this is my car, what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours should theoretically be in effect here. I'm taking the woman.
I went to reach for my gun before realizing they had taken it away from me. By the time I got up, the crony was gone. There was no time to save her, so I got in the car and tooled out of there as fast as the car could take me, which, seeing as it was a car that had been modified to run drugs, was very. I had received a verbal confession from the head of the operation. Now all I had to do was get to the police station, which, all things considered, might take a while, and rally the troops to go in there, get back Marla, and take some names. Looks like we've got some runners to outrun.
We'll return for the exciting conclusion of The Long Drag, Part 2, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Now, where did I put those keys? Rex?
What, dear?
I said, where did I put those keys?
Did you check your pocket, dear?
Why, there they are. Oh boy, do I love pockets. I wish I could take them everywhere I go.
You can. That's how pockets work.
Well, then I wish there was some way to have more of them.
Well, now there is. New from...
Make way, let me pass.
Guys, I thought he was in jail.
You? Who are you?
Bill?
Bill? Could you do me a favor, Bill?
What is that?
Get out of my studio! Leave! Now! Scripts, please. Well, now there. Also, could someone get me a bourbon and tea? Little bit of lemon? Thanks. Well, now there is... Introducing the Porto Pocket!
The Porto Pocket? Wow, I'm intrigued.
As well you should be. From the makers of Porto Gymnasium and Porto Authority comes the Porto Pocket. It's a small pouch with a drawstring coated in the Wonder patent-pending adhesive Stuckalimbo.
So it's a coin purse coated in glue.
Yes, it is. For the small fee of 17,622 Japanese yen, you can own not one, not two, but 57 Porto Pockets.
What would I do with 57 Porto Pockets?
What wouldn't you do with 57 Porto Pockets? The possibilities are endless. Can't fit your bottle cap collection in your pants pockets alone? Stick a few Porto Pockets on your pants and never be without a handy conversation topic. Are you a vagabond in desperate need of financial handouts, yet constantly finding yourself grievously unable to carry change from place to place? Porto Pockets have your back. But don't take my word for it. Listen to what these fine people have to say.
I was listening to the radio when I heard an ad for Porto Pockets. Well, I mailed away for them straight off. They came within 3 business days and I was thrilled. Then I opened the box and, you know, excitedly shoved my hand in there to get the pockets. Well, something they don't tell you is that Stuckalimbo stuff.
Patent pending.
My hand is covered in Porto Pockets. It's for life. We're taking the case to court, but I don't think it'll end well.
I used to be the pilot of a transatlantic plane. On a whim, I decided to buy a few Porto Pockets and bring them with me on the flight. Working the pockets properly can be a bit distracting, and when you know it, due to negligent piloting, the plane went down. I will tell you something. For the money, the Porto Pockets make up the best makeshift life vests. Just blow them up, tie them off, and stick them on your body. And no water seeps through because of that Stuckalimbo.
Patent pending.
Consequently, I was fired from my job. 6 of 1, you know.
I find the pockets made good non-lethal mouse traps. You put a little cheese in there, mouse rushes right into the pocket, or if they just step on the outside, that adhesive will snap them right up.
The Porto Pocket. That's 1-800-BIG-SCAM. And if you order now, we'll throw in a record of ambient polar bear noises.
Why would anyone in their right mind want a recording
of polar bear noises.
You I don't like. Let's listen to that scene again, now that the happy couple has added Porto Pockets into their life.
Now, where did I put those keys?
Check your pocket, dear.
Oh, yeah. No. No. Nope. No. Nope. Not a... yet.
Porto Pocket. That's 1-800-BIG-SCAM. 1-800-BIG-SCAM. Not available in Canada.
We now return to the exciting conclusion of The Adventures of Harry Flynn.
After an hour or so of winding down all sorts of different back roads and corridors, I found myself on the main drag of the city. From there, it was a quick drive over to the TCPD. I bounded in.
Anyway, as we were saying, this isn't a... Harry? What happened to you? You look like hell.
Good to see you too, Bob. You see, we've been...
I'm sorry, Harry. I'd love to stand around and idly chat, but I have to go talk to the commissioner.
Oh. Well, I'll come with you. I need to talk with him anyway. All I have to do is plead my case to the commissioner, which shouldn't be so hard, seeing as my close friend Travis Spin...
Yeah? What? I'm busy.
Rogers? Hold on. Murdoch, what is this? Some kind of prank? He was the new guy before.
No. You know very well what happened. You don't know what happened? Where have you been?
Kidnapped. Beaten. Marla's still there. You know, that kind of thing.
Oh. Well then. Unfortunately, Spinelli's been discharged as commissioner for a stunt he tried to pull with radio broadcasting. It didn't end well. Rogers was the most qualified for the job, and, well, it just seemed easier than bringing in a new person.
But he is new.
Relatively. But he's nowhere near as new as someone from out of town. See what I'm saying?
No.
Well, you wouldn't.
No, just, there's been a lot of brain trauma. Look, is Spinelli still here? I mean, was this stunt bad enough to get him fired?
Oh, no. Just demoted. He's still an active police officer. I believe he's teamed up with, Officer Spinoza.
Poor guy can't even get a break with the partners. Guess I'll drop by after I say what I came to say to the commissioner.
All right. You know what? I just realized I forgot some paperwork downstairs. I've had the commissioner in that time. Oh, and Spinelli's down in his old office, if you'd want to see him.
I stood there in the doorway, unable to process the sight of this lanky, greasy, unfeeling man sitting there, detached, in my friend's seat. It made me sick just thinking about it.
Well?
Well what?
Say what you got to say and then get out. I'm busy.
He said, as he lifted a science fiction pulp up into his line of vision. Alright, look, an associate of mine has been kidnapped and is being held hostage by the gang that murdered Johnny Sullivan.
That girl you dated?
How did you...
Words get around. Continue.
Well, we got a verbal confession from them, too. And I was...
Who?
The gang that murdered Johnny Sullivan.
And who was that?
Johnny Sullivan? The Sullivan case? That young auto mechanic who was murdered. We got the gang's confession.
Alright, now what?
Well, now we round up some cops and go gangbusters on the whole association, getting Marla back in the process.
No.
No? What do you mean, no?
Listen, Flagstone.
Flynn.
Flynn. It was one person. I'm not sending out a squadron of officers to avenge one person, so no.
And Marla?
Okay, so now it's only two people.
But what about the drug ring? We could catch them.
So you expect to win in a car chase against people whose cars were specifically designed to outrun law enforcement. What are you, an idiot?
Well, when you put it that way...
Get out. Oh, and,
Flynn.
Right. Close the door behind you.
I had a feeling that Commissioner Rogers and I weren't going to see eye to eye on a few more things than this. I walked down the hall to where Spinelli's old office was, and, sure enough, there sat a forlorn Spinelli, dazing dejectedly off into the corner. Next to him was the recurrent ball of insanity that is Officer Spinoza, currently swatting a slightly folded hand around with intense concentration.
Oh, hi, Harry. I guess you heard.
Yeah, I heard. Sorry.
No, it's all right. It's just that, well, that's all I had ever wanted as a police officer. Heck, that was all anyone ever wants as a police officer, and I had it. Now it's gone.
Dang it! Now I have to start all over!
What exactly are you doing?
Pretending I have a paddleball game. I'm going to try to beat my high score.
But yeah, that radio thing was awful.
I can't believe he got away on a live radio feed. I feel like a buffoon, you know. Radio's darling.
Well, I hadn't heard that. Listen, what are you doing right now?
Right now? Nothing.
Grab your coat and follow me. You too, Spinoza.
Can I bring the paddleball game?
There is no...
Harry... Let her dream.
Fine. You can bring the paddleball game. Spinosa, do me a... Never mind. Spinelli, do me a favor. Go down to the phone and call up Deborah and her family. If anyone's going to want a piece of these guys, it's the Sullivans.
You got it, Harry.
Let's go. We ran downstairs, splitting up at the entranceway. I was Spinosa out to the car, and Spinelli to call up the Sullivans. We told them to meet us at Murray's Scented Candle Shop. We were all there and ready by no later than 11. Mr. Sullivan was dressed in old moth-eaten army fatigues that didn't, in the strictest definition of the word, fit him anymore.
Lance Corporal Horace P. Sullivan, reporting for duty, sir.
Lance Corporal? Deborah, I didn't know you had military men in your family.
Oh yeah, he served in the Great War. He was at the front lines during the Hundred Days Offensive.
Really?
Yes, really. Is there something wrong with me serving in the Hundred Days Offensive now?
No, it's just... nothing. It's nothing.
That's where we met! I was a nurse for the Marine Corps! Oh, Horace! Oh, Barbara! The trenches!
I think I'm gonna be sick.
Well, alright. Anyway, let's go in there and see what kind of information we can get out of old Murray. Spinelli, you with us? You don't look so hot.
Huh? It's nothing. It's just, you know, if I were commissioner, I'd have made that order.
No time to cry over spilt milk. Now, this may be the most ragtag assorted group of individuals I've ever seen compiled anywhere other than an all-night diner. Still, I have faith in all of you. Let's do this. For Johnny on three. One, two, three.
Johnny!
We swooped into the candle makers. He was out front, arranging all the candles, from as far as I could tell.
Hello, large mob of people. How may I help you two? Oh, no.
Deborah tackled him.
Oh, no.
While Horace started in punching.
This is not fun for me.
Barbara got out a vial of perfume and threw it in his eyes.
Yeah! Ah, no!
While all the while, Spinelli looked depressingly at a floral arrangement and Spumosa played her invisible paddleball game, I walked up to Murray, giving him a once-over that wasn't that friendly.
Please, do what you want to me, but don't hurt the candles.
Don't hurt the... You threw them at the back of my head.
I didn't. I never hurt you or your lady friend. Please, don't hurt the candles.
You said this is the place we would die.
They told me to. If I didn't, they said they'd close the business.
Is that why they use this place as a front?
Yeah. I don't know what to do. Ever since I was in the army, all I've wanted to do was...
Hold on. Now, let me guess. You were a member
of the
Hundred
Days Offensive. Yeah, how'd you know?
Lucky guess. Continue.
Ever since then, I ain't wanted to do nothing except making candles. You have to help me.
All right. But first, where are they?
They're in the back.
Thanks. Come on, you guys. Let's go. Oh, let's go.
Johnny.
Will Harry and his mismatched gang of adventurers win it all? Will Dimmy and his cohorts be defeated? Will Murray be able to make candles in peace? The answer is yes. Yes to all of those.
Wow, what a battle.
You said it. A 43-minute car chase.
I know, and how about that end fight?
That was just about the most sonically interesting fight I've ever heard. I didn't know crystals could vibrate like that.
Me either.
And that 8-minute back and forth we had about life pulled me right out of my slump. Hey, I'll see you around, Harry.
I'll see you around. And Spinelli walked over to Deborah, presumably to see how she was holding up after a knife fight with Deamy. Well, to make a long story short, Deamy's behind bars, Marlo's recovering from her wounds nicely in the hospital, and the Sullivans can rest easy knowing their son was a good boy through and through. That's just another day in the life of Harry Flynn.
This has been The Adventures of Harry Flynn, presented by WRKC. This week's episode, The Long Drag, Part 2, was written by Lucas Tomasacci. Our cast today was Brandy George as Susie, Darlene, Deborah Sullivan, and Officer Spumosa. Christopher Gatpo as Crony, Rex, and Commissioner Rogers. DJ Nat as Harry Flynn and Sven. Drake Nestor as Thug, Commercial Announcer, D.A. Murdoch, and Horace Sullivan. And Lucas Tomasacci as Announcer, Murray, Demi Costas, Not Commercial Announcer, Gary, and Officer Spinelli. Special guest star Samuel Groom as Random Person. Theme for The Adventures of Harry Flynn composed by Michael Wall and David Tomasacci. As performed by Michael Wall on piano, drums, and trumpet. Terrence Karn on accordion and Luis Obergon on viola. With sound engineering by Michael Wall. Can't get enough Harry Flynn? Log on to www.harryflynn.wikia.com or find us on Facebook for all of your Harry Flynn related needs, including MP3s of previous episodes.